Welcome to Uncut, a special edition of the Conversations podcast by Texas Scorecard, where we're sitting down with real candidates running for statewide office and asking them real questions, unfiltered. You can find more at texasscorecard.com. Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor here at Texas Scorecard. And right now we're being joined by Victor Avila, a candidate for Texas Land Commissioner. Victor, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Brandon. Appreciate it.
So for people who don't know your background, give them a little bit of details about you know, why you got in the race and what made you interested in this.
Absolutely. I joined the race this past November after giving it very, very methodical thought, after researching and doing a lot of looking into what this office does. And really, when I saw the duties of the Texas Land Commissioner, basically had my name written on it. I have a experience that is very unique to this office that I could bring and experience. Some people might know, I'm a retired ICE Homeland Security Investigation Special Agent, and I worked at different levels of government. I worked at the county level, I've worked at the state level, federal level, and an international level, which gives me a very good sense of what to bring to this office when it comes to negotiating, and we'll get back more into details about that. But I've born and raised in El Paso, Texas. Worked most of my career on the border, on obviously in the side of Texas, and also on the Mexican side as a U.S. diplomat representing our country and our state, and also abroad in Europe.
What do you think the problems? Obviously, this is an open seat now. But what issues do you have with perhaps the way the office is currently being run?
Well, there's some. And one of the reasons why I ran in is to, I want to be a change agent when it comes to this office and do things that possibly have never been done before. And it's not just because, maybe the office can't do it. It's just that nobody has possibly explored the capabilities of the general land office. And that's what I'm known for. That's what I've done in my career. And that's what I plan to do in this office. And I bring, for example, you asked me what previous things have been done or not done well in this office. And one of the examples is, for example, the crisis management when it comes to our hurricanes or tornadoes that we face and these natural disasters. I bring that experience firsthand. I'm not a person that can talk about it, but a person that has been there and done that. I've worked Hurricane Katrina in 2005 on the ground. And I know a lot of people might not be aware of, but the Homeland Security Department does a lot of things, not just law enforcement, but we respond to these natural disasters. And in 2005, that's exactly what I did. And I was able to look at the situation on the ground from security purposes all the way to placement of individuals. Yes, that means land. Yes, that means managing a lot of things on the ground at the same time while you have a crisis. I bring that knowledge to this office. I think that was lacked this past time. As I found out, this office, the state of Texas received $4.3 billion from the federal government in aid. But the city of Houston didn't see that money. It went around the city of Houston to the more rural areas. And I'm wondering why. Well, the criteria that was used to determine who received the money was erroneous in the sense that the qualifications didn't merit for the core urban developed areas. In other words, the city of Houston didn't qualify, and therefore they didn't get the money. And I'm thinking, I'm a logical person. I look out the window and I see that it's flooded, and that the water is up to the roof levels. That's what I need to see to determine that the help needs to go here. I don't need a 105-point inspection of a document from the red tape and bureaucracy of the government. And I bring that that logic, that common sense approach to this office.
When you look at, we'll talk about this, I think, for quite some time. It's the biggest issue, I think, one of the biggest issues you hear from folks over the last year or so has been the increased attention on the invasion on our southern border right now. What can the land office be doing? Obviously, you've got your history as a retired ICE agent in your own perspective. Is there anything the land office can be doing to try to push back against this?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, the general land office is already involved. They're already working together with our governor to build the state wall. and some of it is already up, as a matter of fact. And so this office will actually increase their presence when it comes to the southern border. You know, the 13 million acres of land that the General Land Office oversees and protects in the state of Texas, I think the one that we're going to concentrate, at least I am, first is that public land on our border. And along with the public land is that land that touches the private landowners and ranchers. I just got back from the border talking to them again. I've been going there this whole year, once a month, aside from my expertise as a border agent, because I like to learn more. I like to learn from the people. I want to hear from the border agents, and I get briefed by the sector chiefs. And the landowners tell me they're ready to donate their land. They're ready to negotiate because they're fed up with the illegal activity coming through their property, not just illegal immigration and what they face with that, but they're afraid of the cartels. We have armed cartel members patrolling on their Texas property, and they're afraid to shoot this guy or defend themselves because they know they'll bring the wrath of the cartels on them, and they're not going to do that. So they're afraid in their own property, in their own home, in their own state of Texas.
Is the state of Texas doing enough right now to push back against it?
No. So the what you see down there, and I just saw it last week, is a heavy, heavy presence of Texas DPS, our troopers, which are doing a phenomenal job. But what they're doing is law enforcement, which is great. You can't turn left or right and not see a trooper. And it's great. So they're interdicting, stopping human smugglers, drugs, guns, people with warrants, you name it, which is incredible in law enforcement. It's great, but that's not border security. And there's a big difference. Border security means when we stop people from coming into this country in the first place. And so the National Guard is there. Unfortunately, it's not doing that. I mean, if there's a presence, it's not deterring anybody. If you can show me one person that has been detained by the National Guard and sent back to Mexico, please let me know, because I'm aware of not one person that happening to one person. Some of the individuals that have been arrested for criminal trespass under the state, there's a lot of issues there. Some have fallen through the cracks. Some have spent months in custody. Some have spent no time in custody. Some have had their charges dropped. Some have had their charges reduced. It's a mess. And but the bottom line is eventually these people then get sent over to Border Patrol. Then Border Patrol releases them into the country because the catch and release policy is well in effect under the federal government.
What do you think the solution is there?
There's a lot of ways we could solve this. The state ultimately does have the power to do it. We do not have to rely on the federal government. And in fact, if we did, we would see even worse of what we're seeing today. And I think I told you earlier, I've been going there, and every time I have a glimpse of hope that it's getting better, and absolutely it's not. It's actually getting worse. We've had police officers now being killed. The constable that was killed in Houston by an illegal alien. This is going to continue to happen. The last thing I want to see is bloodshed on a river against a border agent or someone else get hurt because of the lawlessness that's happening down there. What can we do? We can start actually putting the barriers where it matters. Wall, barriers, gate, whatever you want to call it. But we need to strategically put these barriers, some of it on private land, some of it on public land, where it is going to reduce the amount of traffic coming in to begin with. We're stopping them from coming in. We need to start sending the message that you're not going to come into the state of Texas, because we need to protect our sovereignty at this point. It's not just the state of Texas that we're protecting, by the way. It's the rest of the country.
Right.
A lot of people that I've been contacted outside of the state of Texas that are urging me, please do something, Victor, because whatever you do down there in Texas is affecting us over here in Virginia, Chicago, Colorado, you name it, coast to coast, because these illegal aliens are going everywhere. And there's a my biggest concern is the criminal element that's coming in. We could talk about this all day. I mean, but we have serious offenders coming in, prior deports coming right back. Individuals that have committed serious crimes in this country, have served their prison sentence, have been deported, they're coming back. Also, don't forget the national security and public safety issue that we face. We have terrorists in Mexico. Yes, you heard me right. We have terrorists in Mexico. As a matter of fact, Mexico released one 2 weeks ago. But you didn't see that in the news. Yemen national on the FBI terror watch list. Released like any other illegal alien. You have 30 days to leave the country of Mexico. Where is he? No one knows. Is he in our country? No one knows. This is what we face. the last thing we need to do is find out when someone tries to hurt someone else here in our country. That's too late. Mm-hmm. We need to do something about it now, and it's all down, comes down to the border. What are we also looking at? We're looking at the imminent threat from the cartels. I know that firsthand. I was almost killed by them. My partner died next to me and was killed in the line of duty by the cartels. I know firsthand the imminent danger that we face because of them. And that battle-tested nature that I bring, I will bring that in battling them, mm-hmm. in confronting them. And this is to stop the flow of the human smuggling, the human trafficking, the drugs, the methamphetamine, mm-hmm. the fentanyl. Now, we all know about the overdoses of fentanyl. Mm-hmm. That's been chaotic in our country, over 100,000. But it's the methamphetamine that's causing the crime surge in this country as well. Mm-hmm. That's what's tied directly to these criminal activities. I've talked to Dallas Police, San Antonio Police, Abilene Police, Houston Police Department, and it's meth. Mm-hmm. Colorado, it's methamphetamine is the big problem they have right now.
Interesting. Moving back to the Land Commission position itself, one of the issues that the current Commissioner George P. Bush has gotten in a lot of hot water with over the last few years has been his plan to reimagine the Alamo. How would you have handled that?
Very simple. We need to preserve and defend the Alamo. Simple as that. If somebody wants to move it, if somebody wants to change it, I would oppose that. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. I put my foot down. I'm the land commissioner, mm-hmm. and you're going to leave it alone, plain and simple. See, I'm ready to make the hard, right decisions mm-hmm. instead of the easy, wrong ones. And that's what I bring. I bring conviction, mm-hmm. and I bring the citizens of Texans first. Our citizens want to preserve. I will defend the Alamo. I will leave it as is to preserve our history. No one's going to move any monument anywhere, not in front of the hotel. Mm-hmm. They're not moving the whole Alamo to Loop 410, it's not going to happen under my watch.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that plan kind of went so sideways to begin with?
Well, you have to stand your ground. You have to make a decision. Mm-hmm. And when you don't, if you give them an inch, they'll take an arm. And that's, I think, what happened here. There was not a clear, decisive, moving forward. They didn't say, this is what's going to happen. And they opened the door. And when you open the door, there's a lot of issues that happen. I understand there was also some complications and again, negotiating issues with mm-hmm. the city of San Antonio and the land and what was going on with. And I was just there. I actually stood out there and I saw the new construction of the, mm-hmm. the museum and what's going on. It's actually looking really nice now. And hopefully it'll move forward in the right direction. I'll make sure it does when I get there.
Mm-hmm. Land office is also responsible for the permanent school fund. Is there any reforms you would make there?
Absolutely. So, the last I saw was $16.8 billion mm-hmm. that goes to the permanent school fund from our natural oil and gas resources and mineral rights, also our offshore drilling. You see, the way I see this money that goes to our universities and our school fund is I want to be able to take a good close look at that money and where it's distributed to our mm-hmm. schools and why. One of the things that I oppose, and I think we're all suffering from this throughout our country, not just in Texas, is critical race theory being taught at our schools. Mm-hmm. And I want to see if that funding, they tell me, Victor, this is an office that is a pass-through office. Mm-hmm. That money has been legislatively appropriated, mm-hmm. and you can't do anything about it. Well, I'll tell you what, I will do something about it. I will stand in front of the money. I will challenge the money, especially we have school districts, for example, the Dallas Independent School District, continuing to want to teach this Marxist mm-hmm. agenda to our kids. Mm-hmm. You cut the funding, maybe they don't get money for their building. We've already spent so much money on our education system, and frankly, we haven't seen the results that we want. Mm-hmm. I will take things back to fundamentals and say, I'm going to question that money. If I have to question it at the legislative level, I will.
Mm-hmm. What are the biggest issues you're hearing as you're going out to these candidate forums, going out to these events to meet voters? What are the concerns you're hearing right now?
Number one is the border. Mm-hmm. Number one is concern, the border, and also the protection of our land. We've sold 140,000 acres to China down mm-hmm. in Valverde County. Right next to Laughlin Air Force Base, to a Chinese billionaire that has ties to the CCP. As land commissioner, that's not going to happen. You know, in my career, my expertise is vetting. I vetted a lot of individuals. I vetted a lot of organizations. And I think that's what this office needs to do. people that want to buy our land or lease our land, it's very important to just vet them. Who is and who are the people behind these purchases? And because this is a national security issue. Why is China buying our land? Why? What is their intention? What is their motive behind this? It's not like they're buying a ranch. 140,000 acres is a significant amount of land, especially where they bought it, right next to very, very delicate, areas of our state. And so it's very, very, very troubling to me that this was allowed to happen. As land commissioner, a lot of people tell me, well, that's not your jurisdiction. I dealt with jurisdiction my whole career, and I understand jurisdiction very well. And I will test the jurisdiction of this office to the fullest extent and work with those where the jurisdiction falls on them. I worked with FBI, I worked with DEA, I worked with Secret Service when the jurisdiction, you know, was shifted around the federal government. Doesn't mean that I was out of the picture.
Right.
It means I was involved, and that's what I'll do. I'll be involved, and I'll make sure I see these things through.
Why do you think it is, this is a question we get a lot, that so many people get elected to office and then they don't end up following through on their campaign promises? Why do you think that happens, and why could people trust you not to do the same?
I love that question, and thank you for asking it. I was so surprised when they told me that, you know, Victor, this office is used as a stepping stone for higher office. Really? I really didn't know that, but that's exactly what it is. They use the Texas land, the general land office, for higher office. And I think the people of Texas are tired of seeing recycled politicians go from one elected office to another for personal reasons or for personal career reasons. I'm not here for that. I'm a retired agent. I'm not a politician. But I'm here to save Texas. We're at a beyond a crossroads in our state, in our country, of what we're facing in a lot of aspects. And that's why I ran. I'm applying for this job to do the job of the Texas Land Commissioner at the fullest extent. And that's my whole purpose. I'm a retired federal agent, and I could have been home, but I have service in my heart. That's what I've done all my public life. I want to be able to give back. I have a lot of experience. I have a lot of expertise that I think I could apply here. And I am craving to do it, to give it back. I was left on this earth by the grace of God, and I think that this is my mission to give back. And that's what I intend to do. And it has nothing to do with seeking higher office or anything. It has to do with doing the job at hand. I've applied for many jobs in my career that require high-level clearances and required very, very hard vetting, right? And that's what I want the people to do of Texas. Vet me, look at me, look at all the candidates, and you can see, is Victor the one that we want to defend us, to defend Texas land, to defend our border? And I think they'll decide that I'm the man for this job.
There's, you're talking about the campaign itself before we wrap up here. There are, I think, 8 Republican candidates in the race. One of them has the endorsement of former President Donald Trump. How do you navigate that? Do you think the endorsement matters, A, and B, what is your strategy as we get closer here to Election Day?
Yeah, I've had that question before about the endorsements. A lot of the endorsements that I was seeking were already giving out to a prior candidate, and many people were have told me, we wish we would have given it to you because I wasn't in the race yet. And so they didn't have a chance to give me the endorsement because I wasn't officially filed. And that's okay. And when it comes to President Trump's endorsement, do I wish I would have had it? Of course. But I remind everybody, President Trump didn't have anyone's endorsement. He was an outsider just like me. And he came in as an outsider, as a non-politician, and that's what you're getting from me, an outsider, a non-politician that will work for the people.
And for people who want to follow your campaign or get involved, where can they go do that?
Absolutely. Please go to victoravilatx.com, victoravilatx.com, and your donations are welcome. We're almost there. We are have some incredible momentum. We won the straw poll in Tarrant County just this past week, and I think the people are recognizing what I could do for them.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Uncut, a special edition of Conversations with Texas Scorecard. You can also go to texasscorecard.com to get more journalism and stories just like this. If you like today's episode, please rate and review this podcast on whatever podcasting platform you listen on.